with another episode of Two Twisted Sisters. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Shauna.
And we have a guest today.
Yes, we do.
I'm Kellen. I'm Shauna's son. And I'm an AP Psych student. I actually just graduated, or I finished a class. So,
and we are super excited to have him here today. So, Kellen, we are doing this nature versus nurture theme, and we asked you to join to kind of get your take on things. So why did you want to come on the show?
Well, the discussion of nature versus nurture sounded really familiar to two specific topics in psychology. So basically, the study of psychology is just, why do we do the things we do? And there's a bunch of different fields that study different reasons why we do things. And nature versus nurture really sounds like the fields of behaviorism and biology perspectives on psychology. Now, there's a bunch of other different ones, some less famous than others, but the most popular ones would be like psychoanalytic theory. Behaviorism and biology are pretty popular perspectives that people use with psychology. But another popular one would be like cognition too. That's another good perspective. But yeah, so there's a bunch of research on these two types of perspectives already. So I have input on that.
Well, that's exciting. I'm excited to talk to you about this case today and get your take on whether it's nature or nurture that's kind of led this person to go down the path that they've gone down. So pretty much interrupt whenever you want.
No, I'm really excited. I think it'll be an interesting way of doing this just to see what your perspective on it is. And because I know this is something you're really interested in. So I think it'll be really fun. Take it away, Shauna. What are we talking about here?
So today we're going to talk about a man who is currently in prison in Corcoran State Prison in California. His name is Jamie Osuna. And he's known under several different monikers, but the most famous one is the man with 1,000 faces. And I showed you a picture of him, and he's basically, he has a lot of face tattoos. clearly has taken his inspiration from the Joker.
It's a special, it's like stop eating the paste type special, in my opinion.
And actually,
he has a lot of tattoos.
Yes, he has a lot of tattoos. One of his names is actually the real life Joker. He's also called the sadistic murderer, and we'll talk about why in a little bit. So he's currently serving a life sentence without parole. I picked him for a couple of reasons. First of all, he's only got two confirmed deaths that are actually proven, but he stated that he's done more, but he hasn't provided any information on the other deaths that he says that he's done. But the thing is he has zero remorse for doing them. In fact, he has stated in interviews that if he was given the opportunity, he would do it again and again. And the other reason, I know, he's no remorse at all.
No, thank you.
Yeah. And the other reason that I picked him is because his mother is actually quoted as saying he didn't come out of the womb an evil killer. He was a normal, loving kid. So what do you think happened?
So my first impressions right off the bat, it sounds like he definitely has something called antisocial disorder, which is a disorder that's actually most popularly found among men, which is probably the reason why men are most commonly the people who do these violent crimes. But yeah, honestly, most people who do commit these murders, most of the time they do have actually no remorse for it. And that's probably because of antisocial disorder, which basically is just a complete lack of empathy for other people. I don't know why it's more commonly found in men, but that's definitely sounds like what this guy has, especially, I mean, the face tattoos is also a testament to that because, I mean, that kind of, it kind of destroys his old identity, whatever old identity he had for himself. You know, he definitely tried to, you know, it seems like he tried to get rid of that, try to like resurface as, you know, something completely different, which is another behavior of, you know, being antisocial, you know. So right off the bat, definitely has, you know, antisocial disorder. Yeah, he's not going to feel any empathy for this person. And
so wait,
what's up?
So I've never associated antisocial behavior with lack of empathy. Like, I've never even heard of that before. Is that, I mean...
Yeah, so, well, I mean, empathy is, like, kind of the foundation of sociality between humans. You know, the ability to bond emotionally with others.
I guess that's true.
yeah, yeah. Is kind of what lets everyone be social with each other. So if you, you know, aren't social with other people, it means you don't have empathy for other people. You can't, you know, think about how other people are thinking, you know, kind of only think about yourself. So that's definitely what's happening with this guy.
Yeah, that definitely makes more sense. I never really put those two things together. That's interesting.
I really think that's fascinating, Kellen, that you actually said that, because he does actually have antisocial personality disorder. I think he was even diagnosed with bipolar and schizophrenic behaviors as well. But there was kind of a whole laundry list. And for a while, he wasn't even able to stand trial for about 6 years because they had to prove him competent to do so. And once they did prove him competent, that's when he was able to be convicted for his crimes. So it's very interesting that you picked up on that. But he was born in 1988 in Bakersfield, California. And when he was just a year old, his parents got divorced. And so he was raised by his mom and his stepdad, who was a man named Jeff. Now, his mom said, hey, I don't think he was, you know, evil right out of the womb. But apparently Jeff was going to do his best to fix that problem because he was a terrible, terrible stepfather and would abuse him and torture him and beat him at any given chance. In fact, by the age of 5, Jeff was known to actually tie Jamie to a tree and whip him. And then Jeff and some, and like Jamie's uncles would throw bricks at him and things like that. At one point, he did say that he was abused in that way, but he never identified who did that to him.
Yeah.
Okay. So things that are coming to my mind with that. So that's definitely a behaviorist thing right there. He's definitely modeling almost all of his behavior on just violence, if that's what he grew up as, because, you know, even if he was an abuser, he still was his stepdad. So probably still a prominent male figure in his life. So even if he is treating him terribly, Jamie was probably looking up to him regardless. Could even consider some Stockholm syndrome there. So whatever, you know, behavior that male model was doing in his life, that's what Jamie would model his behavior off of. And that's just how he would learn to get his way. So if he wanted something, he would use violence to get there because that's what he was. That's just what happened to him.
That's what he was essentially taught.
Yeah. And the other thing, and you would think he would mention that in his trial, probably like, oh, wow, well, I was abused. I was treated terrible like that. This is a thing called suppression defense mechanism. This is actually psychoanalytic psychology right here. But oftentimes, if you have a terrible past, people will forget it to protect themselves from the negative feelings that come with it. Their brains will just automatically suppress those memories. So he probably, I mean, I'm sure he was aware that it happened the entire time, but you know, just because of the fact that it grew up with him, that with it happening to him, he probably didn't see it as very significant or like something that would be that noteworthy, you know, because that's just how he grew up. So
that's crazy. Yeah. Well, I feel like we see that with a lot of these serial killer cases. Like there's always some form of abuse somewhere.
Yeah. And that's a really unique perspective, Kellen, that you bring up because he actually, I couldn't find a lot about, I mean, that's really all I could find on the type of abuse that was done at Jeff's hands towards Jamie. But Jamie talked more about what he did as a young child. And that when he was like 8 or 9 years old, he would, anytime his parents would leave, he would torture animals. Like he would put cats in the freezer or in the oven and see how long they could last and how long they could survive. So he enjoyed that and he got a thrill out of it. So that's interesting that he talked more about what he did as opposed to what was done to him. So that's an interesting point that you bring up because you would think that people would just automatically make excuses for, you know, well, I do this because I was, you know, treated badly. But you're right. There are a lot of people that it's their defense mechanism to suppress that and to shut it down and to not remember it.
Yeah. And people like trying to explain their behavior by saying, oh, well, I did this because of this. That's a defense mechanism where you know what you did was wrong and that's why you're trying to defend it. So he probably wouldn't have brought up those excuses because he probably doesn't feel like what he did was wrong. Like if he said, you know, he didn't feel any remorse for it, he doesn't think what he did was morally wrong. That's just, he just did it because he wanted to, you know? So he wasn't necessarily trying to get out of it. He doesn't have that. That's something called cognitive dissonance there when you're trying to justify your wrong behavior. When you do behavior that conflicts with your morals or whatever you're thinking, you know, that's when people would be like, oh, well, I did that because I was treated poorly as a kid. But he doesn't have that. He's not consciously thinking, oh, you know, killing this person, this is a terrible thing. He's just doing it. You know, he's on a completely different mindset of thinking when it comes to, you know, is killing people right or wrong. He just doesn't know.
Yeah.
That's really interesting that you say that, because he did make the statement that I never learned right from wrong. I don't think that he thinks that it was wrong. I think that it was just, you know, it's a Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah.
It's pretty insightful. So now, as he did get older, he graduated from torturing animals to doing drugs. His drug of choice was methamphetamine. He joined local gangs when he was in his early teens. And by age 15, he actually got arrested for assault with a deadly weapon. He'd actually stabbed another boy because he got mad at him. But he'd already had assault and battery and drug possession. Yeah, all under his belt at that time. And so that was the first time he went to jail, was for assault and battery at age 15. He went to juvie. So
15 years old. Like 15 years old. I can't fathom that. And what's crazy is Sean just came home the other night and was like, I had to deal with like a 15-year-old. Actually, he came home the other night and said he had to deal with an 8-year-old who was like threatening them. That just blows my mind. Like, I can't even
fathom
the type of home life. Yeah.
It's really scary. Actually, he later confesses that he committed his first murder at age 13, that he killed a 27-year-old man at age 13. And that's when he did his first murder. And he didn't disclose who it was. He said he doesn't want to play all his cards yet. He wants to keep that close to the vest. So he's like, y'all will find out later. But age 13 to kill your first person. It is. But in December of 2008, he went to a party and he met a woman, the woman who was throwing the party. Her name was Jane. And she was 37 years old. She had 3 kids by other men at this point. So while they were there, Jamie got into a fight with another guy. So he just walks into the kitchen, grabs a knife, and goes in and stabs this guy with a kitchen knife. He didn't die or anything, but, you know, Jamie got arrested and he got sent to jail. And while he was at jail, Jane starts writing letters to him and they develop this relationship.
She's one of those.
He's one of those. Yeah. And actually,
is there a name for those types of chicks that, like,
I don't know. Do you know? Is there a name for those types of chicks?
No.
It's not jailbirds or something. I don't know.
I think
if you know, let us know
in the comments.
There's like a funny name that they call the chicks that like go after convicts or whatever.
So. Yeah, I don't know. But it wasn't like necessarily super romantic on her part, but she was kind of enamored with him. And so they stayed in touch while he was in jail. And then after he gets out of jail, she picks him up and he's like, hey, you want to go to a hotel room? And she's like, why not? And so she apparently wasn't
Why not?
You know, a bad decision in that moment. But apparently she wasn't like in love with him or anything. She was just kind of like, oh, this is kind of a cool guy, you know. And
how long was he in jail?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember.
Did you do your research?
It was spotty. This guy is in and out of jail. Like, if you really want me to, I'll go back and get you all the dates, but it's going to be like January of 2008 and to February and then March to, you know, whatever. It's like really, he's just in and out of jail all the time. So this is just one of his forays that he went to jail after he stabbed a guy at Jane's party. But long story short, they have a one night fling and Jane finds out that she's pregnant. And so Jamie's excited. He's like, great, you know, and he's actually at this point treating her pretty well and taking care of her. And he talks her into marrying him. And he's like, we should get married before that you have the baby and I'll take care of you. And, you know, so they end up getting married. And she kind of says later, she's like, I was never really in love with him, but he treated me well at the time. So I fell in love with him, not like a romantic love, but more of a, you know, he's good to me type thing. And
she wasn't in love with him, but she had love for him.
Yeah. And I guess things went well for a while until after the baby was born. And then he kind of changed and became mean, started becoming abusive, and they started getting into a lot of fights. And so much so that Jamie kept going back to jail for small stints for domestic violence and for parole violation. Yeah. And every time he'd get back out, Jane would take him back in. And
wow. Yeah. Just a, forgive me. I forgot exactly what it was called, but there's a, some theory of motivation. That's basically just people will do things just for the thrill, just for the rush that you get from doing things. And it kind of sounds like that's completely what he's driven by here. Cause you'd think, you know, you think like getting in a relationship with this guy, that would be like, there are already red flags everywhere. But you're like, oh, well, he actually treated her well for a little bit. Like, how does that even happen? Well, it's probably because at the beginning of the relationship, that was something like new for Jamie. So he, it gave him that rush and he was like, oh, wow, okay. And he was able to, you know, get his time out of it. And then after a while, he probably just got bored of it and then just went back to, you know, I'm bored. I'm going to start doing violent things again. You know, he's just doing things just for, you know, any sort of dopamine rush. That's just like pretty much the motivation for all his behavior at this point. So that's why he would start treating her like that after a little bit, because he's just like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this for now. So that's probably why he just started treating her bad, started getting violent again. So
that's really fascinating. And actually, he does say later that he I don't want to give it away too much, but he talks about the rush. He talks about that thrill that he gets. And so I think there's a lot to be said about what you just said, Kellen.
Good grief. Do you already know this case? What's happening here, Kellen?
I know, right? In one of his stints in jail, before Jane took him back, he actually picked his meth habit back up. Yay. When he gets out of jail, he comes back and he's doing meth now. And so the next time they got into a fight, his violence at that point escalated. And he ended up trying to choke her out during one of their fights. And so she happened to get a piece of glass and was able to cut his arm. And he, you know, got up and dressed his arm, and then he, you know, the fight was over. But shortly after that, the violence escalated towards one of her children. She had a 7-year-old son who was from a previous marriage or previous
relationship.
And so Jamie actually started becoming abusive towards that child. And so Jane was like, nah, you're done. We're finished. I'm finished. And so she.
Okay. I can like Jane for that.
Well,
I swear, if you were going to tell me that she was just like, well, it's fine, and like defended him. Ooh, I'm going to punch.
No. In fact, she went to the kitchen and grabbed 2 butcher knives and came after him. Her own.
Good for her.
Her older children had to protect Jamie against Jane. They were like, whoa, mom, calm down. You're going crazy.
Good.
So, yeah. So she kicked him out.
Mama bear coming out.
Exactly. And she would call the police when he would try to come back. And then he was arrested again and put in jail. And then a few months later, he was released on October 31st. And this was in 2011. The second he gets out of jail, he starts to terrorize Jane again.
What?
Making phone calls, driving by her house, coming by the windows, doing all kinds of things to just try and psychologically terrorize her.
Adding stalker to the list now.
Yeah, he's just, he's like Kellen said, it's like the thrill of the thing, you know, it's exciting for him. So he's driving by, he's stopping by her house and looking in the windows. He's sending her voicemails and trying to call her and saying things like, I'm going to cut you and I'm going to stab you and stuff like that. So it's pretty terrorizing. And Kelly, maybe you can speak to this part, because I don't understand how you call 911 5 times in a row and the dispatch says, well, you know, you're next up on our list for them to come check on. Is he in your house right now? Because it seems like you're safe. Who does that? Like who has to call 911 5 times in a row?
I mean, it could be different variables there, because she could be calling and be pretty calm about it. So they may not think that it's super urgent because of the way that she is handling it. I'm not saying that that's what happened. I'm just saying that a lot of times that's how like dispatchers do try to defuse situations, but they also like feed off the energy of what's being said to them. And then as far as waiting that night, it may have well been really shorthanded when it comes to officers out, because especially on evening shifts, like they're call to call and they do get backed up a lot.
Yeah, I think that's what happened, because she said that there was no deputy available at the time, because they had the actual calls that they were, that we were listening to, were the actual 911 calls.
Oh, wow.
And they said there was not a deputy available, but the last call that Jamie made to Jane said, quote, "Watch the news, bleep. I killed a woman at the Morocco." And she called 911 again, and she was like, "Can you check and see if anybody is hurt at the Morocco Hotel on Union Street? Because, you know, this, I just got this message from my ex." And they were like, "No, nothing's been reported yet." And apparently the hotel was like this really seedy hotel where a lot of parolees and drug users were there. So it was always loud and noisy and everything. So it wasn't until 5 days later that an employee actually found a woman dead in room 119.
No, okay.
Yeah. So he did. He had actually killed somebody. And then he called his ex-wife and left a voicemail saying, "Yeah, I did this." So they caught him.
What a giant weirdo.
No.
Kellen, do you think it just seems weird? Because I feel like this is something you see a lot in serial killer cases, is like they oftentimes figure out a way to let people know exactly what they did. It's like they're being cocky about it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's kind of just attributes to how just messed up their moral compass is and how it's just not even comparable to a neurotypical brain, you know? I mean, that's just me being like, "Oh, mom, you know, I got my homework done at school today, so I don't have any to do when I get home," you know? That's like the same ordeal, you know? He's like, "Yeah, I just, you know, killed this person." So, you know, I mean, he could be bragging about it, but it's like the same way that a student would be bragging about their grades, you know? It's just, I mean, he was just trained on violence, you know? This is all he knows, basically. So this is just what his life is and how he communicates is just purely through violence, you know? So that's
So it's like attention seeking, but like not the way a normal person would do it.
I don't know if you could necessarily call it attention seeking. I don't know how much, because for him, you know, his motivation to do things is purely, I can't say purely, but probably very strongly related to just the dopamine rush he gets out of it. And having antisocial personality disorder, he probably just doesn't care about what other people think very much. But I take that back, because what you said earlier about how he, you know, had cards left to play about confessing to his murders, because so it sounds like there is some like thematic, you know, flair he's trying to add to his crimes, but like it's probably just intimidation, I would assume, that he's trying to induce. So he's not trying to be like, look at me, like I'm so cool, but like, look at me, I'm so scary, you know? So it was definitely just intimidation tactics that he was using to not necessarily get attention, but just another way of expressing violence.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, because he called her and left it on her voicemail. And I think the intent was to scare her and say, "Hey, I did this." And, you know, thereby the natural threat is I could do it to you as well. So I think it was to scare her. It was psychological torment. And that was just inherent in him that he did.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So the last call that Jamie made to Jane said, "I killed a woman at the Morocco." Her name was Yvette Pina. She had actually been at the hotel. It was kind of her last ditch effort to try to get her life back in order. She had quite a abusive childhood as well, and you know, had gone through some really rough times, but she was trying to get her life back together. She'd only met Jamie once, and it was like in passing. It wasn't even like they hung out or anything. He saw her and he was like, she would be easy to get to. And he later said during his interview that he had a news reporter come in 3 days before his trial for Yvette's murder. And she did this interview with him to just kind of find out, well, why did you do all of these things, you know? And he actually said, "Man, the hotel was loud. People were yelling a lot normally because they were doing drugs and they were parolees. And I was able to spend time doing whatever I wanted to Yvette, and her screams wouldn't have called the cops or anything." That's why he said, "I don't know her. It was convenient. You know, there was an opportunity there." So he went for it, and that's why he killed her.
What a monster.
I know.
I don't have time.
It's crazy.
Why do these people exist? I don't understand it.
It's crazy. Had no rhyme or reason. Just, hey, look, she's available, and I can take some time on with her. You know, it was pretty brutal what he did to her. And her sister said that Yvette's biggest fear happened to be clowns. And no. So she was just haunted by the fact that Jamie's face was the last one that she saw.
No, yeah.
I know. And that's just terrible. Sad. Yeah. And that is why clowns are the worst. So he didn't confess at this time, although he did leave a voicemail saying, this is what I did. He did get put in jail. And like I said, it took 6 years to finally get him to the point where they were going to go to trial. So in 2017,
6 years before his trial,
that's how long it took.
That, what? Yep. How? Why?
Some of it was declaring his lawyers tried to declare him unfit to be tried because of his disorders. And what'd you call it?
Antisocial personality disorder.
Antisocial personality disorder. Yeah. So, you know, and the other things that he was diagnosed with psychologically, those were some of the reasons why his lawyers were playing the insanity card. And I don't think that, in fact, we find out later that Jamie eventually fired his lawyers. I think he was like, I mean, he was in and out of jail so much that he didn't care. He even said that the interview lady, she said, would you ever do it again? And he said, oh yeah, if I lived my life over again, I wouldn't change anything. I would have done the things exactly the same.
That's crazy.
And he said, given the opportunity, I'd kill again. Absolutely.
Wow. So he never gave like any type of real reason for why he did this. Like just it was convenient.
He said he likes it. He does talk about that. I'll tell you in a minute what he said about that.
Well, I mean, just think about why we do the things we do in our daily lives, you know, and the way we live, it's basically just for being happy. You know, we just do things that give us joy and give us pleasure. So for him, all he knows that pleasure is from doing those violent things, you know?
Yeah.
So it's basically, I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of the same mindset we have. He just has an extreme outlet for it because that's just that's all he's known. You know, there's a critical period in child development where, you know, you learn these things, how to deal with these things and how you do these things. And for him, it was just violence. There's the answer to everything, violence, intimidation. Just everything. So he thinks he's living his life the same as we are. Just, you know, you do things because they make you happy. And his thing was just all this violence. So it's unfortunate, but I mean, you're not going to get like a better, you know, reason. There's no deep reason like, oh, I was trying to send a message to everyone. Like, no, he's just living his life. And that's why given, would you do it all again? I'm sure during it, like his life sounds terrible, you know, but he said, if he had to do it all again, he wouldn't change a thing about his life because he has no idea what a normal life would be like.
No point of reference there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, for him, if his enjoyment was violence and he had plenty of that in his life, then yeah, sure. I'm sure he wouldn't want to change a thing. You know, it sounds like he did exactly what he wanted.
Muy interesante.
Yeah, that's very true. What you said, in the interview, he said that when you shoot somebody, the gun is doing most of the work. The bullet goes in and you get a splat of blood and that's it. He said, you might forget about it a year or two later, but if you torture a body and stay with it afterwards, the smell, the decomposing that occurs, when you experience that, it stays with you forever. And so he said for him, it was like a prize or a trophy. It was a memory that he could go back and get pleasure from it. He said, as you you get a rush and it's like an addiction. It's like a drug. But he said he would rather kill people than do drugs. He said a lot of other things.
Oh, my.
And I'm not going to repeat what he said because it was pretty brutal. But
yeah, let's not.
No. So basically, he's in jail now for 6 years. He's awaiting trial.
And he's still in jail? Yes, you said that?
He's in jail. He was, because he pled guilty to the murder of Yvette, they didn't give him the death penalty. They went ahead and just gave him life without parole. So he'll be there forever. But you can imagine a guy like this, you would not want to give a cellmate to. You just wouldn't want to do it.
No.
And, I mean, even in jail, he would attack other inmates if he got mad and he would use whatever he had available. He attacked one inmate, and the guy had to get 67 stitches. They wanted to take pictures so that they could prosecute him for it. And the guy goes, nope, I don't want him to have those as a trophy, because he recognized that Jamie was insane. Like he was just a murderous person. And he would do things like, other than attack other inmates, he would send dead rats to his ex-wife in the mail.
Oh.
And then he would make all of these elaborate satanic letters and send them to the DA with pictures of her, the DA,
with like, looks like she has slashes. Yeah, while he was in jail, he'd send these to her, and then slashes on her neck and slashes on her mouth, like he was going to do that to her. And he would say things like, smile now, die later, or you'll never know how many people I killed, or more will die later. And then he would sign the letters, quote, your diabolical friend, Osuna, end quote.
Oh, my.
So he was pretty much never going to get a cellmate. But in 2019, on his birthday, I don't know if maybe this guy, they were trying to get rid of him or what, and they just let Jamie do the job. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but somebody made the decision to put another inmate in with Jamie. But this guy was not, his name was Luis Romero. He'd been in jail for 27 years already.
Oh, wow.
This guy was a seasoned inmate. He knew his way around. He should have known to protect himself and how to protect himself, but somehow, this is why I'm like, I feel like there's something that happened here, because one, they should have known not to put an inmate with him. And two, who puts an inmate in there and then doesn't check on him in 2 days? 2 days later,
what?
They find Romero lying dead in Jamie's cell. His body was dismembered. His head was cut off. His mouth was sliced up like the Joker. Jamie had cut off body parts and made a necklace with them and was just sitting
there. But like
there.
How? With what?
He had made like a razor. He'd gotten like some sort of a, so could you imagine with like a razor how long it would have taken to cut that guy's head off?
Cut bone with a razor?
Dude.
Can you?
2 days. And the medical examiner said that he'd been alive when all of it started.
Oh, no.
So needless to say, those guards were reprimanded for not properly checking the cells like they were supposed to.
I mean, I was just, this is nothing to do with psychology, but like, if you are to take apart body parts with a razor, you probably just make it loose and then just tear off the rest. Like, I don't imagine it was like a clean cut, you know? Imagine like an apple and you would like kind of like cut it halfway and then you just like tear off the rest with your hands, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just what I was thinking.
Thank you for that visual, Kellen.
We're so glad we brought you here.
Oh my gosh. You just shave a little bit and then you're rip it right off.
He's like, I see you're struggling with how this could have happened. Let me help you with that. Let me help you figure out how that could have went down. What I want to know is if he started while he was still alive, did nobody scream? Like, how did they just ignore him for two whole days?
That's
and
nuts.
Let him spend 2 days with a dead guy in a cell? I mean, that was like Christmas for this guy.
That's weird.
You know, I don't know anything about how prisons work, but like to me, it just definitely sounds like they completely knew what was going to happen.
Yes.
There's no way that it was like, oops, I didn't know that was going to happen. Everyone could have seen that coming from a mile away. So I don't know. They just were like, I don't like this Romero guy. We're just going to put them in here or put them together, see what happens, you know, letting like really hungry rats like in a pit together and just be like, all right, just do your thing. I'm going to go somewhere else.
So it was like dog fighting.
I mean, yeah, I can't imagine. It seems like the punitive system that's, you know, putting him in jail is like, but it's when they put him back out of jail, you know, like, okay, you served your time, you know, and it's already like the sixth time he's been in jail. Are they like, this is the time. This is the time he changed and he's going to go back to being a normal person. Like, no, like he's he's going to go back in there. Like, I feel like at a certain point, this should just be like, okay, dude, like you're not even trying. Like we should keep you in jail forever because you're just going to go back out and do more things. You know, like how do you gauge someone's, because I mean, like, I'm sure there are things that people go to prison for and then they get out and they're like, okay, you know, like this is a chance to restart my life. But for someone who's in and out that frequently, there's definitely just a psychological problem there. And like, okay, you can't be out in society right now. You're going to harm more people and do more bad things. And how are people not seeing the pattern here? And how can you like consciously let someone like that back out into the world and just be like, yeah, I won't see him in 4 months. You know, that's just crazy to me.
I agree, which means I think someone took a hit out on Luis Romero. That's what happened. They were like, we need to get rid of this guy. And so put him in a cell with Jamie. Jamie will take care of everything for us.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, I would hope that that's not what it was. Definitely seems that way. Nobody come for us, please. Yeah. We're just just voicing some opinions here.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to consider his cell too. Like, he had a weapon that he could have used, you know? Like, why were they not also routinely checking his cell for weapons? I mean, if he had a file, I mean, like, an edge like that takes time to file down, you know? So he definitely, like, so many things had to be, oops, I forgot to check that. It's just improbable that that was just an accident. There's too many things.
Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. Absolutely. So my question is, like I said, he's still in prison. I don't know if they've tacked on Luis's murder yet, because it happened in 2019. And apparently the judicial system takes a little bit of time to work itself out. I don't know. So I don't know if he's tacked on that, but I don't know what they can do more than life without parole, other than the death penalty. But I don't know. But it just begs the question. He clearly has no remorse. His mother says he didn't start out that way. We know lots of people who are abused. How do you get there? I was reading some articles on neuroplasticity. And if you don't know what that is, it's basically where there's theories on the different, at what point does your brain stop progressing in an area? Like you've gotten to that point and that's the most you can learn about that. And so they call it neuroplasticity because, you know, hard plastic, mm-hmm. right? Think of it that way. So it's theorized that the brain will often develop a divergent pathway around that in order to get past that barrier. And so mm-hmm. if someone's shot in the head, they can learn how to talk again if they're given therapy, because their brain creates new pathways, right?
Right.
So there's just lots of things, like, you know, if a child is born in the woods and raised by wolves, you know, can you bring them out when they're 15 and can they learn to interact with humans and stuff? And so, you know, are we saying,
you know what? Tarzan did it. So
that's what that critical period that I was talking about earlier. There's that for lots of different things, like especially language acquisition. There's definitely a certain time in a children's life where it's most easiest to, you know, learn a language. But if you don't learn it during that time, it's really, really hard for you to learn after that. There's actually a case, I forgot exactly what it was called, but there's this girl who was abused by her father, basically just by being in complete isolation for like the first like 13 years of her life. And when they found her daily routine was just being in this concrete box, and there was like a crib, and she would get fed twice a day. And then that was it. She didn't interact with her father at all, didn't interact with anything. Complete isolation for like 13 years. And when they finally found her, there was definitely a lot of things that, you know, we were all taught as, you know, as children, and she didn't learn them. Like whenever she was walking, she kind of had like a feral stance to it. Like she was kind of crouched the entire time. She had her hands up in front of her, like a T-Rex or something. And yeah, and she didn't know any language, and she didn't seem disturbed, but she just basically just like a 13-year-old baby. You know,
yeah.
And they tried to, you know, when they found her, they were like, okay, like, let's start treatment, you know? So they tried to communicate with her and tried to teach her all these things, and it just wasn't working. Like it was so difficult to teach her. So problems like these are definitely much more preemptive problem solving rather than trying to fix the problems later, because it's just really hard. And yeah. And that thing, neuroplasticity, that's your brain's ability to change, basically. And that definitely lessens with age. Yeah. So they're just points in a person's life where, like, you know, at least for the time being, we don't know how to reverse all of that. So there's definitely other types of therapies that people do try. Like there's people who try direct surgery on the brain to change behavior. And that's definitely a thing that's happened, but there's too much unknown about, you know, the brain to be able to be like, oh, this little part of the brain is this part of your personality. You know, like we can't, you know, it's each brain, like basically has its own code for what that is. Like we can tell like which part of your brain is activated whenever you're thinking which thing, but it's different for everyone, you know? So we can't really model, we can't really change a person's personality all that easily. Like it's really difficult. So you can't treat stuff like that, basically. You know, it's all about just preventing those irregularities during childhood development. You know, it's just about ensuring that we can make those childhood developments like the most sensitive and most healthily reinforcement time during their lives. So
Kellen, do you think that Jamie ever had a chance? Do you think that what he went through and who he became, that he ever had a chance for becoming something other than he is now?
So, I mean, given his backstory, being taught completely on abuse, you definitely have people who have tough childhoods, but then they come out as good people. So like, what's different here? And that's, you know, that's where your, you know, nature versus nurture debate comes from. But I would definitely say at this point, it's up to Jamie's, I mean, biology, basically, if he was going to be met with all of this and be like, no, you know, like, this isn't right. Or if he's going to be like, oh, this is how it is, you know, and that's all it is. And I think that's such like a minor aspect of what it is. Like, definitely if he had a different childhood, then yeah, he would have been, you know, normal. He might have aggressive traits, but if he learned, you know, what normal life was like, then yeah, he most definitely could have been different. Like, it wasn't predetermined necessarily by his biology that he would turn out like this. And it wasn't necessarily predetermined by his childhood that he turned out like this. It was a combination of what his biology would do in response to his childhood, and it was a response of, it was a, his childhood happening to him, you know? So it's kind of, in the end, when it comes to nature versus nurture, it's both, you know. There, all these different fields of psychology, they're like, you can explain all behavior with this or with this, but what's like the most popular take on it now is, well, you have a behavior and you can explain it with this, and you have a behavior and you can explain it with a different theory, you know, and they kind of all just apply in their own way. And the way I like to think about nature versus nurture, though, is I'd say your biology is a template, and nurture is just the stimulus that goes into your development, and your biology is like the algorithm that shoots out however you turn out, you know? So yeah. So growing up is you put these numbers into the algorithm, which is your biology, and then your biology spits out, you know, whatever you grow up to turn into. So it's both determined on the algorithm and what you put into the algorithm, and that determines what you get out of it. So
I agree with you. I don't think that there's any one thing that's over the other. I don't think that you're ever going to be able to say that it's always going to be nature or it's always going to be nurture. And I'm always, always brought back to that episode of Criminal Minds where the 9-year-old boy kills his 7-year-old brother because he broke his airplane and he just has no empathy. He got angry and did it and then went on with his day, you know, and he was fine. And I was just like, I mean, and he came from a good family who was loving and kind. And so what would cause that? And so I really think, I like your analogy of the algorithm and you know, the stimulus. That's actually profound because it means that there are two sides to this and there are different variations and grades of each side. And so you can have a lot of different outcomes based on so many different variables. So it can be a guide, but it can't necessarily predict anything and it can't necessarily say, yeah, this is for sure going to happen.
Something else that you talked about, Kellen, was just how everybody's brain is different and how there's so many different variables that go into who we are as people and why we do the things that we do. And there's no way of really, truly narrowing down why we do those things, because we are all different. And so looking at a person like this who has a moral compass, who grew up there's so many different factors into why he was the way he was. But I think you're right. Like, we'll never truly be able to know like what really truly played the part in making him choose the things that he chose. And I think that's really interesting to me, just that we are so different. So there's really no way of ever knowing.
Well, I'm sure there is eventually going to be a way of knowing, because relatively to other scientists, psychology is actually an extremely new science. If you think about it, I mean, we theorized that atoms would exist thousands of years ago, but the first time anyone thought, hey, if you're abused as a child, that might affect how you turn out as an adult. We didn't think that until like 200 years ago, you know, but we thought about such an abstract concept of atoms like thousands of years ago. So compared to other scientists, there is just not a lot we know about psychology. And we're definitely learning at a faster rate, you know, than we did when we had sticks and fire and all that. But
when we hit sticks and fire,
it's, yeah, but we're, I mean, just comparatively, it's a really, it's a brand new science. So there's definitely lots of things that we have yet to discover. That, honestly, that surprised me when I started learning about psychology. You know, I was like, okay, what's the answer? And they're like, oh, I don't know. We just think a bunch of different stuff. You know, it's all theories, you know, there's no algorithm to it really. There's kind of, I mean, they're right answers, but there's also like other answers that are kind of right and some that are really right, you know? So I'm like, oh,
yeah.
But
and some that just haven't been proven wrong yet. So we're not sure, but that's a guess that we have right now.
There are definitely things that are like, we just say they're wrong because we don't really like them very much. And we don't really, there's a lot of Freud. Sometimes it's hard to prove it wrong, but we just say like, you know, I don't really like that, because there's just, you can take one behavior and explain it with like almost every theory and be like, well, which one's right? These all make perfect sense, you know? So we just don't know right now, but I'm sure as we, you know, study it more, I mean, there's definitely some sort of algorithm to how, you know, the human brain was designed. There's some similarity across all of us. Cause I mean, across all animals in general, there's the blueprint of, you know, actually not all animals, but there is that. I mean, actually there is a blueprint, not the blueprint for every animal, but a blueprint for animals like us of, you know, having a brain. And and it came from an initially simple structure. So, and it was able to build on that and become as complex as it is now. So there's definitely a way to understand it, but it just takes a lot and we're just not there yet. But yeah. I'm sure, I mean, at some point, you know, maybe we will be able to treat people like this or be able to fix these types of problems. But for now, we just have to focus on, you know, preventing this, you know, because it's just so much harder to fix it than it is to prevent it.
Like everything else in life.
Right.
Well, this was awesome. And yeah. Kellen, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been super interesting to me. I hope that our audience finds it as interesting as I have. I love your insight on things, and it's actually helped me kind of explain Jamie's behavior a little bit deeper than I think that we usually go. So I really like the different perspectives you've given us.
Yeah, I definitely didn't connect a lot of those things together, and it made way more sense, and it was really cool. Really cool to look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, especially with the debate of nature versus nurture, I think that started because, like, who do we blame for all this? You know, like, are we able to sympathize with him because he had such a terrible childhood? But I'm like, what, he killed so many people? Like, that's terrible, you know? And I think that's kind of the hardest thing about this discussion is figuring out how do you bring justice to someone who's so obviously mentally disturbed? So, I don't know, but... But thank you for having me on your little podcast thing. I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thanks, our little Kellen. Podcast thing.
Hey.
I feel so diminished.
Hey, we have a lot of downloads from a lot of different people in a lot of different countries, okay? So just be nice to us. Thanks, Kellen, for being on with us today.
You're welcome.
And happy graduation.
Oh, yeah, I just graduated, by the way. Yippee.
Yay.
He's a man now.
I've been a man for a little bit, but yeah,
that is true.
Hopefully we'll be able to get some more episodes pumped out pretty quick. We're sorry for the delay. I think the last one we did was in January.
Yeah, it's been months. Sorry. I feel so bad that life got a little crazy there for a little bit, more so than insane. Usual. Yeah, not my favorite, but we made it through to the other side and we are back in business.
We're not going to promise anything right away.
Nope, not a promise at all.
we're really terrible at keeping quiet. Yeah, we'll see when we see you. But we're going to try. We'll see how it goes.